My name is Hari Svogan. I'm a principal at 270 Strategies, which is a public engagement firm. Before that, I was the National Press Secretary and Deputy Communications Director for the Democratic National Committee, where I led the rapid response operation for the Democratic Party under President Obama. Prior to that, I served as President Obama's senior spokesman on the 2008 campaign, where my job every day was to win the news cycle for then Senators Obama and Biden. Welcome to Module 4. Today we're going to talk a little bit about how to implement your communication strategy that you've been talking about for the last three modules. Start by recapping Module 3. Three takeaways from Module 3. Know your win number and how you'll get there. Use all the channels available to you to tell your story. But make a plan to be sure everyone on your team is telling the same story. And what we're here to talk about today is what happens when your plan goes awry, because we live in the Trump era. And in the Trump era, all plans go awry, and they are subject to chaos.
I'm not going to give you a question.
Can you stay categorical?
You are fake news.
Sir.
So we thought we could come up with some rules of the road to help you navigate situations where your plan doesn't quite work out the way you wanted because there's a lot of chaos. So, first rule, and this is important because it's going to go against your natural instincts. You're going to want to respond to everything that you see. And the first thing you need to do is to filter that response, filter that instinct, and pick and choose what you want to respond to. I used to be a school teacher. In one of my many, many lives before I became a political hack. And the first thing a fellow master teacher said to me when I entered the classroom was, your kids are gonna present a lot of stuff to you. You gotta pick and choose your battles. The media is a lot like a classroom, and you can manage it in a lot of the same ways. You need to pick and choose your battles. The test I usually apply is, if you're gonna speak to something, you are gonna validate that thing. You're gonna validate the attack by addressing it. You're gonna give it oxygen, is the term that people will use in the business a little bit. So the test that you apply is pretty simple. Does the political benefit of giving this attack oxygen outweigh giving it oxygen? And if it does, it's okay to go address. But if it doesn't, you don't need to address everything. The other thing to keep in mind is, and this is also very, very hard, especially for people that work at EDF or in environmental causes, is you're not trying to be right. You're trying to win. And those are different things, right? You're not trying to persuade someone that you're right, your argument is correct. You're trying to win that day. You're trying to win that news cycle. Those are two different things. Rule two, you don't need to stay on topic. You should talk about what you want to talk about. It's going to go against your instincts, but it's the right thing to do. To illustrate that point, I need a volunteer. Anyone? Marco, what is your favorite ice cream flavor?
Cookies and cream.
Cookies and cream. Okay. You and I are going to have an argument about the best flavor of ice cream. Okay? Your job is to convince me that cookies and cream is the best flavor. There is no other flavor but cookies and cream. I'm going to say vanilla is my favorite. By the way, vanilla is a flavor. It's not the absence of flavor. I know people will say
I'll take that.
All right. You are cookies and cream.
Yes.
I'm vanilla. Fight to the death.
Sure.
Ready? Marco, what is your favorite ice cream flavor?
Cookies and cream.
Why is it your favorite flavor?
Because I think it really speaks my inner values and stuff. I think it's a really amazing flavor. It has a lot of great textures. Definitely, I love Oreo, so that's definitely a plus. It's available at a lot of places, so you don't have to, you know, go far to get it. You can go around any shop if you want.
So, your values, textures, availability.
Yes.
This makes cookies and cream the best ice cream flavor there is.
Hands down.
And there's no other flavor for you but cookies and cream.
No.
I like vanilla, but I'm gonna say that vanilla's not enough for me. Neither is cookies and cream. I want choices. I want people to be able to choose whatever flavor they want. It doesn't have to be cookies and cream. It doesn't have to be vanilla. It's about freedom. It's about liberty. right? So Marco and I are arguing about ice cream flavors, ostensibly, but I don't want to argue about ice cream flavors because I can't win that battle with Marco. He can't win that battle with me. It does not matter what flavor of ice cream is the best. What matters is the value that I want to speak to eventually, not this particular issue of ice cream. There's a difference between values and issues, and you always want to speak to values, not necessarily issues, right? So you want to talk about what you want to talk about. So even if the conversation is about ice cream or it's about a particular issue, you can always move it to talk about the values that you want to talk about and put it on ground where you feel more comfortable. Because again, we're not trying to be right. I'm not trying to persuade Marco. I'm trying to talk to the rest of the world and win this particular argument. How do you do that? Pivots. Pivots are important. Again, you're going to feel a little icky when you say stuff like this, but that's okay. Because you're going to divert from the question that's being asked to something you want to talk about. So you should take a couple of these. Let me tell you what's important here. Actually, the real issue is, let me put that into perspective for you. You should practice these. You should try, you know, different things that work for you. These are things that people use on TV sometimes. You'll see in media appearances when talking heads really want to talk about what they want to talk about, they'll use these things. And it's going to feel a little strange, but it's okay. Do it. Move on. Talk to what you want to talk about. So one of the issues you might encounter is, how do I use these things and not sound like a robot, right? I think there's two things to keep in mind. One, there's a lot of these bridging phrases. You should practice them. Have 20 of them ready for you, right? You should always think about, whenever you're doing a media appearance, you should think about, you know, if you've created a message triangle to talk about what you want to talk about and you know what you're going to go in saying, think about how to say that in 2 to 3 different ways, right? So you can come back to it and not sound like a robot. And you need to practice that. That's something you practice. Same thing with bridging phrases. Have a couple different options ready for you. Practice them. The other thing to remember and to keep in mind is when somebody talks to you, they're talking about an issue maybe, but really they're talking about a value. And the pivot isn't just words. The pivot is listening, identifying the value that they're talking about, and pivoting to continue to talk about that value, but in a different way, right? So like, listen, capture what they're trying to say, right? Identify what they're trying to say, what value they're speaking to, and then say, but you know what really helps our kids? Or you know what really is important for the future? Like, you're connecting the value from what they're talking about, pivoting, but you're still talking about the value to what you want to talk about. We're going to move on to rapid response 101. When you've decided what you want to talk about, you've decided you want to engage, you've decided this is an issue that you're going to engage in, it's okay to give the argument oxygen. You know what you want to do. You move into a phase called rapid response. And rapid response is something people talk about a lot, but it's sort of a misnomer. Because a good rapid response plan is neither rapid nor is it responsive. Rule 3, you want to deliberately anticipate attacks and prepare usable responses for multiple channels of distribution. We talked in Module 3 about how we want to move our message through all the channels available to us. We'll get to that in a second. But let's break this rule up into parts and take them each individually. A successful rapid response operation is deliberate and built well in advance of its necessity. So that, again, belies the notion of rapid response. It is neither rapid nor responsive. It is instead planned out well in advance. It is thought out. It is purposeful, well before it is necessary. It proactively anticipates and prepares for its attacks. This is really, really important. A rapid response operation should start months in advance of when you need it. And you should game out exactly the attacks that are coming at you. You'll put together message boxes that you learned about in an earlier module from Linda and Rick. Those message boxes are going to help you. They're going to help you identify the attacks that are coming at you. They're going to identify the vulnerabilities that you have. They're also going to help you identify the assets you have to push back. You want to do that exercise, that gaming out, well in advance so you know what's coming. You can marshal your assets, prepare them in the right way, because you want to prepare those things in usable bytes of information. Just having a load of information that responds to anticipated attacks is not helpful. It is utterly useless. It is, because you're going to, this is all happening in real time, very, very fast. So you're going to want things that you're going to be able to get out to people and that people are going to be able to digest very quickly and use very quickly. And finally, a rapid response operation cultivates channels of distribution. And you want this done, again, in advance, not in real time when you're in a crisis or having to deal with things in real time. You will have cultivated channels to actually move these bits of information. And the bits of information will be tailored to those channels so they are usable for those channels. So for example, your rapid response operation will anticipate attacks. They'll marshal your facts, they'll prepare a response in usable pieces of information for, let's say, Twitter, right? So you're going to have your response that comes out in, let's a one-page fact sheet, talking points, but it's also going to be in tweets, right? And that's going to be done in advance. Let's say you've cultivated an online following and you've identified through your organizing program some super volunteers, right? Those super volunteers are going to go out and they're going to post stuff on Facebook and then in comment sections and on Reddits. They need bullet points with facts and links, right? You're going to have that ready for them because it's going to be usable and it's going to be tailored for them, and they will have already been prepared because you will have cultivated that channel of distribution. Moving on to rule four. Again, you're going to encounter these situations in real time in what seems like a crisis. You'll be prepared, and so you'll have confidence going in, but you still need to make some decisions. You need to make some decisions about the first two rules that we talked about. Do we engage? Do we give this thing oxygen? And what's the frame we set for this? What do we want to talk about? The other rule that you need to have ready, have thought about, is a defined chain of command and decision structure that is in place before the crisis occurs, right? They are going to make the decision about whether to engage, how to engage in a rapid response timeline. There's usually just three buckets, let's say, of time. There is before the attack, there's during the attack, there is after the attack. Before the attack, you're gonna have your communications team, your research team, your policy team, maybe some leadership, identify potential lines of attack. This should be a group exercise. You want as many minds as you can involved in this exercise because you want to anticipate everything that can come at you. And this is coming well beforehand, so it doesn't have to be super efficient, right? As we move down the timeline, we're going to narrow that. The filter of people involved in the process is going to narrow because you want to be more and more efficient. You're also going to develop a list of other voices other than your organization that are going to validate your pushback, right? Again, you want to cultivate your distribution channels ahead of time. That includes cultivating the voices that you need. So that could be policy experts. It could be real people that are affected by the issue. So if you're talking about environmental issues, I think you're definitely going to want people who are involved in health, people who are involved in some business things probably, moms, teachers, definitely policy experts that are well-versed in environmental issues and scientific issues. You want to cultivate all of those things in advance. But during the attack, you'll have already laid out a structure to identify issues, There will be a person who's clearly designated to make a call about whether to go or no-go, to whether to engage or not engage, and someone who's going to help frame the response for you. And then someone who's going to help push everything out. So your previously identified decision makers, it could be on a campaign, it would usually be your communications director or press secretary chooses whether to respond or not to respond based on sort of the tests that we've looked at before. And you're going to get support from your research and political teams to help you make sure that you get the framing of your response right, because you want to make sure factually you're on solid ground. But again, it's one or two people at most that are making that decision. After the attack, you've already made the decision to engage, you've pushed out your frame, now you want to make sure that all your channels and all your allies, all the work that you've done to cultivate voices to help you out when this thing comes, are moving. And so you're going to have people that are designated to follow up on each of your channels and each of your sets of surrogates and voices that are supporting your effort to push back. So for a lot of you, you're not going to have the freedom to use a huge team. You're going to have a much smaller team. But the principles still apply here. You still want to be prepared. You're still going to want as many voices as you can. So that could be people that are paid by your campaign, but it could be volunteers, it could be your supporters that know you well, it could be your friends and your family. I always have candidate spouses in early rapid response preparation sections because they know better than anyone. It could be your friends. You should bring all those people in, use them as resources early on to identify and be prepared for attacks. During the attack, you're still going to identify one person on your campaign that is going to be responsible for the go, no-go, and the framing. That stays the same. But then, even if you have a small team, the filter goes back out after the attack. You're going to want to take that same group of volunteers, that same group of friends, same group of family who are not paid by the campaign, and make sure that they are incorporated in your planning as a channel of distribution. They're going to be voices that you want telling your story for you. And they're going to have credibility to do it because they know you best. Any questions on that?
What if you initially decided not to respond to attack, but then you see it getting traction? How should you be dealing with that in real time?
That's a good question. What's your name?
Brendan.
Brendan, that's a great question. I think it's going to depend on each individual situation. The test is dynamic. It's going to go through the entire timeline of this attack. And so there is going to be situations where the political benefit of weighing in relative to the validity or oxygen you give to the argument is going to change over time. And if that happens, you should weigh in at that point. I think it is okay to change your mind. You shouldn't be afraid to do it. But when you do it, you should be forceful about it and not hesitant about it. So we're going to move on to creating your calendar. Because rule five is, the best defense is a great offense, and you should not be, we'll talk about a calendar, and the key to the calendar is, it gives you guidelines, but it's okay to go off the calendar if you need to. Creating your calendar. I like to think about calendars in three ways. Again, you want the calendar because if you're in an environment of chaos, you won't constantly want to be talking about what you're talking about, what you want to talk about, right? And you want to be proactive about it. I think about three kinds of calendars. There are organic moments, right? Earth Day, for example, is a moment that exists on the calendar. Mother's Day is a moment that exists on the calendar. Weekends are moments that exist on the calendar. Fall is a moment that exists on the calendar, right? You want to identify political moments. When are legislative sessions? Are there filing deadlines? Are there big debates that are happening? These are things that you're going to impose on top of your organic moments on the calendar. And then the third thing that you're going to overlay is your own stuff. What are the assets that you have? What are the priorities that you want to talk about? And how are you going to map those out over a calendar? So if you lay these three calendars over each other, you'll be able to identify moments that you want to take advantage of to move out your message. Let's talk a little bit about how to actually move your message. Once you've identified it, once you've identified when you want to move it, there are three vehicles, three general buckets of moving your list, right? There is the stuff that you own, there's the stuff that you pay for, and there's the stuff that you earn. It's pretty much the three buckets of life as well. Owned. What do you own that you control, right? This is the thing that you are gonna have pretty much the most control over in terms of who sees it, in terms of what it says. Social, so your Facebook, your Twitter, your Snapchat, your text program, if you have a text program, and your email list. Paid, what are you paying for? Digital ads, increasingly, and television. Here you can target digital slightly more than you can with television right now, but that could change over time. But you can target and reach a broader group of people than people that are looking for you. You're gonna go look for them, right? As compared to own. Earned, and this is your traditional media. This is your print media. This is your electronic media, TV, radio. This is the least control, but probably the broadest reach. Also, you get a layer of credibility and validity through earned media that you don't through paid or owned, right? Because there's a filter. The filter comes with good and bad. It filters, but it adds the stamp of authority, right? You want to use all three of these things strategically, smartly, when they make the most sense. Are there any questions about any of that? Marco?
So do you prepare for every niche argument? You're saying how you need to prepare for communication, you need to prepare for rapid response, or do you just have several R&R plans that you go to sort of encompass a bunch of like different subjects? Like, for example, hurricanes. You could prepare for hurricanes and stuff, but do you necessarily make an exact plan for hurricanes, or do you just fit that within some other sort of rapid response plan?
So if you anticipate that hurricanes are going to be a moment where your voice as an organization is important to that story, and that there is strategic advantage in you speaking up at that time, I would prepare for hurricanes as part of your rapid response plan. I would prepare the arguments that you know that are going to come at you. So it could be like hurricanes are not or the severity of hurricanes are not related to climate change, right? Like, that's something that might come up in a situation that we're talking about hurricanes relative to the things that you want to talk about, right? Like, that's an argument that might come up. I would be ready for that argument. I would have the actual factual pushback. I would have the values pushback. I would have the voices that you want to voice that argument. I mean, so scientists, people who make their living and lives on coasts, real people, and then cultivate all of those things into usable information that you've got ready to move. So if you think it's going to be part of the discussion and that you want it to be part of the discussion, yeah, I would make sure that you have a separate plan for that. Are there any questions? What's your name?
Fiona.
Fiona, what's your question?
So you said that there are three different types of communication mediums, and so I was just wondering if you tailor your message to which medium you are using.
That's a good question. One, you should be aware that all of your, anything that you're communicating outside of the organization is public. So you're gonna be held accountable for all of it, and all of it relative to one another. So you don't wanna have two completely different messages out there on two different mediums. And you want message consistency, like we talked about in module three. But you are gonna tailor it for the medium itself, right? So for Twitter, for example, you literally have a character limit. The other thing that you're gonna wanna tailor it for is on your owned, and sometimes on your paid, you get to do an ask. There's an organizing aspect to this too, right? In addition to the communications aspect. And you get to ask people either to sign up to your list or give you money or share something, share a infographic, for example, with somebody else. So you're gonna wanna tailor it that way too. The other thing to think about is there are gonna be differences in how people take that information in. So on owned and paid, there is going to be a level of control that you have over the message, and so you should say exactly what you want. But they're also going to be a little bit more suspect because they know it's you're paying for it or it's something that you put up there. On earned, you don't get as much control, right? And so you're going to have to frame it a little bit differently. You're going to engage with it a little bit differently. And there's going to be somebody who's interpreting for you. There's going to be a reporter, most likely, that's interpreting for you. And so you're going to have to engage the reporter in a slightly different way. But the message, the core message, should be the same.
So I have a question. If my campaign doesn't have a lot of money, which of these should I try to prioritize?
It's a good question. Well, there are three kinds, right? There's owned, there's paid, and there's earned. If you don't have a lot of money, you can't pay for a lot of stuff. So I would say that's probably last. But there are interesting ways to do this that we can talk about. I would prioritize your owned, because you get to control it the most, right? You can build its reach organically. You can add Facebook followers, you can add email subscribers, but you can only go so far without paying for a paid advertising program that's gonna bring in more folks, right? So you gotta be smart about when you want to invest. But you can invest in a very targeted way using your owned media. So you can target your Facebook ads. Like if you have a really brilliant, wonderful infographic that you want everybody to share, you want everybody to see, or you have a great video that you post on Facebook, you can target the universe and do a little bit of paid promotion behind it in a very efficient way. So you're combining owned and paid there in creating that story is pretty low. So there's trade-offs. But there's also, I mean, one of the things that we've done successfully a couple times is do something very cheap in the paid media world to create earned media, right? So I'll give you an example. When I was working at the DNC, the RNC had essentially floated this conspiracy theory that we were using Google search ads for horrible things, I'm sure. And what I did was I created a Google search ad about the RNC communications director, which cost me like maybe $1.50, and turned that into a news story because I gave it to Politico, right? And that became an earned media story, but it was a very cheap paid media story. So you can be a little stunty like that and take very targeted, very low cost paid media. It's called a show buy and turn that into earned media. The most famous example of that, I wish I was the most famous example of that, but the most famous example of that is the Daisy ad. That ad, it's famous, we're still talking about it 60 years later. That ad only ran once, one time. They paid for it one time, and we're still talking about it 60 years later, right? So you can do things like that that amplify other types of media to have a broader reach without a lot of money. Let's move on to case studies. A really good case study that's been recent that sort of illustrates these points is when President Trump pulled out of the Paris Climate Accords and he said he was elected to represent Pittsburgh, not Paris. I think the first thing to do is look at what he did as a lesson in communications here. He did not talk about the benefits or the costs or the issues or the policy involved in the Paris Treaty at all. He spoke to values. He represents real, hardworking Americans in Pittsburgh, not elite globalist Frenchies, right? This is a values statement. And that's really, really important for us to recognize that he did. And we should also speak to it the same way. So one of the best responses to this elected to represent Pittsburgh, not Paris, is from someone who was elected to represent Pittsburgh, Mayor Peduto. the mayor of Pittsburgh. He tweeted out very quickly on the same day after the president pulled out of the Paris Treaty. As the mayor of Pittsburgh, I can assure you that we follow the guidelines of the Paris Agreement for our people, our economy, and for the future. His office, him, he had to decide whether to engage here, because he, by engaging, is going to definitely give the president's statement oxygen, right? So he went through a calculation. The conversation probably went something like this. Do we need to get involved here? Some person in the press team says, like, we're going to be asked anyway, right? Because it's about Pittsburgh, so they're definitely going to come to us for comment. So we might as well frame it the way we want. And it's an opportunity. It's an opportunity to take and frame this argument the way we want and talk about our own record on this, talk about the values we want to talk about on this, because Mayor Peduto has a pretty good record on this. So they made that choice. They made the choice to engage, and then they made the choice to frame this in the way that they wanted to talk about it, right? So again, they're talking about not Paris in terms of the issues, in terms of the specific issues, but in terms of their values. This is about fighting for the future of Pittsburgh. It's about fighting for the people of Pittsburgh. Right? Not because it changes from one industry to another, not because it reduces greenhouse gases. It's about their future. It's about their economy. Now, this was his Twitter. This is his owned media. They also went out and used paid media. They put out a full page ad with an ask to help them build out their list with allies. They've cultivated these allies and are ready to move on this stuff. And they used earned media to push back. So this is a really good example of using all three mediums, making a decision to engage, using all three mediums and framing the conversation the way you want to frame the conversation. All right, finally, he not only responded, they kept going, right? They saw it as an opportunity. They saw it as a way to move their frame. So they had a series of events over the next weeks and months that continue to push this frame and continue to bring that frame to life over the course of time. So what you notice, we talked about keeping your calendar and keeping the message that you want to talk about proactively going. So Mayor Peduto talked to the values that he wanted to talk about in his response to Trump. He's talking about the economy and Pittsburgh's future and the lives of Pittsburghers, Pittsburghians, Pittsburghers, I think. And so he continues to go on offense because that is always the best defense, right? So he's going to continue to talk about the lives, the economy, and the future of Pittsburgh in multiple different ways. He's going to talk about it in terms of the environment. He's also going to talk about it in terms of bike lanes and bringing Uber to town. So keep that in mind, that your message is still your message, and you get to control what you get to control, which is your calendar. So even after a moment comes and goes, you need to continue to push the same values that you talked about in that moment. Any questions about this? Yeah.
So I'm wondering, when big moments happen, so say like when a hurricane happens, it seems really logical to see that as a moment to talk about climate change. But at the same time, how do you use moments like that while not seeming like politically opportunist or like a jerk?
Yeah. Sometimes you might seem opportunist and like a jerk, and you should register that. I think that's something you weigh in the political benefit analysis. The other thing to do here, though, is to acknowledge it. And I think if you acknowledge that this is an important moment and we need to, for example, let's say in a hurricane, we need to focus on recovery and relief right now. But we can't lose in this storm, the idea that we can't allow this to happen in the future, right? Like, it's okay to acknowledge that this is a moment that you need to focus on the more immediate concern, but then say, but let's not lose sight of the fact that we also need to think about how we make sure that this doesn't happen again in the future. Let's recap. First thing, that I want you to walk away from this with is you control your message. It is your message. No one can tell you what to say. It doesn't matter what the question is that's posed to you. It doesn't matter what the attack is against you. You get to define what you want to talk about and when you want to talk about it. That means you're going to need to plan ahead. A rapid response operation is neither rapid nor responsive. It is proactive. It is well planned. It is well thought out. And it's also not, you're not just thinking about the message that you want to use then, but also the channels of distribution and what those pieces or how those messages are packaged for those channels of distribution. And finally, seize every opportunity to tell your story. Use every channel that is available to you, whether that is your owned, whether that is paid, or whether that is earned media, because it's your story to tell. You know, this curriculum covered a lot of things. It covered one, polling and an analysis of the landscape and how to make the environment a winning issue for your campaign. It talked about how to incorporate that message into your campaign, how to localize it, how to make it real for people that you want to talk to. It talked about integrating that message into every aspect of your campaign, into every asset that you have, and amplifying your message with all of your departments. And finally, it talked about communicating in the Trump era where there's a lot of chaos and making sure that your message breaks through. And we covered all these things today, but it's not the end of the conversation. There's going to be more resources available in the coming days and weeks, and we look forward to sharing those with you as well.